Mortgage rates are expected to decrease in the year ahead. Will you be ready? Hi, I'm Rob West. If you're hoping to join the ranks of homeowners, the promise of lower mortgage rates has no doubt gotten your attention. There's more to buying a home than saving a down payment, however. Today, I have 10 steps to help you prepare for a home purchase. Then we have lots of great listener questions ahead, but we won't be taking your live calls today because this program is pre-recorded. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. So mortgage rates actually crept back up even after the Federal Reserve lowered rates by a half a point in September. We haven't yet seen the anticipated decline in mortgage rates, but that's okay. It gives you more time to get ready, especially if you're a first-time home buyer. I want to give a shout-out to our friends at Movement Mortgage for a great article on faithfi.com about preparing for a home purchase. We'll hit the high points here, and we'll also put a link to the article in today's show notes. So here we go. First, and obviously, determine what you can afford. Be wary of what a prospective lender or loan calculator tells you. It's wise to settle on a sale price and monthly payment that are less than what you can afford. Keep some margin in your budget. Remember Proverbs 21:20, precious treasure and oil are in a wise man's dwelling, but a foolish man devours it. Next, set a savings goal for your down payment. While you don't need to put 20% down on a house, doing so has three advantages. It lowers the amount you'll have to borrow. It eliminates private mortgage insurance. It also gives you enough equity to sell the house if you have to due to a job loss or some other calamity. So, if you don't have 20% saved, see how close you can get. Then, consider the incidentals related to the purchase beyond the down payment. Set aside something for property and pest inspections, moving expenses, and possible appliance purchases like a fridge or washer and dryer. Depending on your area, the sellers may take that stuff with them. Next, check your credit. Average credit scores for home buyers typically run between 700 and 750. Anything above 740 will often get you the best mortgage rates. Get your credit reports, check for errors, and dispute any mistakes you find. Pay down your balances below 30% of available credit. Pay all of your bills on time. Those things will help raise your score. You must also say no to all credit card offers from here on out. Don't apply for or take out any new loans. Even if you end up not taking out a new credit card or car loan, just the so-called hard inquiries by lenders will lower your credit score. I mentioned this one a bit ago, but it bears repeating. Lower your debt-to-income ratio. You might have an immaculate credit history and still be denied a mortgage if your debt is too high for your income. This applies not only to credit cards, but to any kind of debt. So, for example, if you can pay off a car loan, do it. Next, pay attention to your paper trail. Avoid transferring money between checking, savings, and retirement accounts for at least 3 months before applying for a mortgage. Lenders look at your transaction history to determine if the source of those assets is legitimate, meaning not borrowed. If you receive cash gifts before applying, it can put a wrinkle in the process. Mortgage rules generally allow for this, but it's a good idea to speak to a loan officer before having those funds transferred. The requirements for documenting the receipt of those funds can often be quite specific. You'll have to show that the money is indeed a gift and not a personal loan that will have to be repaid after you purchase the home. That could require getting a signed statement from the giver that the money is indeed a gift. If you owe back taxes and are on a monthly payment plan, try to get that paid off before applying. It adds to your debt-to-income ratio and makes it more challenging to qualify for a loan. It's also not something prospective lenders want to see. They're in front of any other creditors you might have, except the IRS that can put a tax lien on your house. So get those paid off before you apply for a mortgage. And finally, don't go anywhere job-wise. Your lender will take a hard look at your employment history. If you're considering changing jobs and buying a house, buy the house first. A lender is more comfortable giving you a mortgage if you've been in your job for at least 2 years. So those are the steps to prepare for buying a home. You may still have questions about your home purchase, and we hope you'll contact the folks at Movement Mortgage for more information. They can help guide you through the process step by step. And bonus, if you get a mortgage from Movement, you'll be helping to make the world a better place. A thoroughly Christian company, Movement has given $377 million to philanthropic causes, including much-needed infrastructure and education facilities in underserved areas. In the U.S. Go to movement.com/faith. That's movement.com/faith. We'll be right back.
For your walk with Jesus, I'm David Wolin with Haven Today, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. There's no place quite like home, is there? Especially if you're far away. King David, who wrote Psalm 23, often found himself far from home, but as that psalm concludes, it's clear David is thinking about another home. He writes in verse 6, "Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever." As good as an earthly home can be, nothing could compare with the eternal home waiting for us in glory. Like David, even if you're missing home, you can trust there is an even better one awaiting you and all who trust in the Lord Jesus Christ. Get more daily encouragement from God's Word with Anchor Devotional. Try it out at getanchor.com.
Are you a financial advisor or CPA seeking to build your practice on biblical wisdom? Not only does the Certified Kingdom Advisor education provide you with deep biblical insights, the CKA designation sets you apart. Each year, almost 50,000 people search for a Christian financial advisor. Join our community and share your expertise with clients looking for someone who shares their faith and values. Find more information at kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified.
Hey, moms and dads, are you at your wit's end? Hi, this is Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. I'm so grateful for the partnership we have with American Family Radio. We share a common goal to bring hope to hurting families through the life-changing medium of radio. Be sure to listen Saturday afternoons at 4:30 Central on American Family Radio. Find help and hope for your family with Parenting Today's Teens.
We're grateful for support from Guidestone, whose diversified suite of investment solutions align with Christian values to create positive change in the world. More information is available at GuidestoneFunds.com/faith. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Guidestone Funds before investing. They're distributed by Foresight Funds Distributors, LLC, which is not an advisory affiliate, a registered investment advisor, nor do they provide investment advice.
We're grateful for support from Timothy Plan. For more than 30 years, they've served clients on a biblically responsible journey to invest in a way that honors God and gives dignity to people's lives. More information is at timothyplan.com. The investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses are contained in the prospectus and summary prospectus available at timothyplan.com. Mutual funds distributed by Timothy Partners LTD and ETFs distributed by Foresight Fund Services LLC.
So thankful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. Our goal in this program, to help you be a wise and faithful steward. That means we have to start with the idea that God owns it all. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it. Therefore, we're His money managers or stewards of His resources and money. Well, money's a tool to accomplish His purposes. So we should really start with our values and priorities as believers and then order our financial lives accordingly, heeding the counsel of Scripture, applying principles, and then building a spending plan based on how much is enough, asking God what lifestyle He's called us to, and then building a plan that allows us to give every dollar a name, but not letting the world or the culture or a system built on materialism inform our decisions, but really making our decisions in light of what's most important to us. Well, we want to help you do that on this program each day, not being in pointing a finger at you or trying to discourage you in any way. We want to be hopeful and encouraging
as we help you apply God's wisdom to your financial life. In the news today, some really interesting data out related to cars and what's happening in the car market right now, and it's concerning. A growing number of Americans are upside down on their car loans. That's according to a new survey by the automotive research site Edmunds. Worse, the amount owed on car loans is at an all-time high. This is a result of so-called negative equity on trade-ins. Buyers owe more on their trade-ins than the cars are worth, often described as being underwater or upside down on those loans. Listen to this. The survey showed that about a quarter of new car buyers were upside down on their trade-ins in the period from July through September. That's up 24% from the previous three-month period. The average amount still owed on trade-ins is now at a record high of $6,500, and that's nearly a quarter of buyers that still owe at least $10,000 on their trade-ins. So it seems that folks are losing ground on paying off their car loans, actually going deeper in the hole as time goes on. There's, of course, a way to avoid this. Number one, keep your car as long as possible, at the very least until the loan is paid off, so you don't go backwards on a trade-in. Continue paying yourself the monthly payment. Once your car is paid off, that becomes your down payment on the next car. Do that with each car purchase until one day you can pay entirely in cash at the time of the purchase. It's almost impossible to pay cash for a home up front these days, but that's not the case with cars. You can eventually have enough saved to pay for a car outright if you really try, and that's, of course, where you want to be. You'll save untold thousands of dollars over the years by not paying interest on car loans. So just be on your guard there. You know, this is really challenging just because of what has happened in the last several years in the car market because of supply chain constraints and chip shortages. We had a lower inventory of new cars that pushed used cars up as well. All that has led, on top of the high interest rates, to a real challenge for Americans. The average new car loan payment right now, monthly payment, is around $730, about $560 on average for Americans related to used cars, and north of $500 as well on leases. But let's not get into that. Bottom line is, just be on your guard here. This is one of the three big budget busters: housing, transportation, and food. Housing and transportation, a little harder to curb over food, but nevertheless, you can do it. So let's not get into car loans we can't afford. Let's certainly not replace cars before they're paid off. We don't want to carry that negative equity into the next car. That's just going to further put you upside down, because remember, if you're buying new, you lose about 25% when you drive off the lot. But if you're carrying $5,000 to $7,000, even more than $10,000 from the previous car into the new car, well, that really creates some challenges. So just be on your guard. Hope that helps. All right, we're going to dive into your questions. Let's start today in Leesburg, Florida. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay, I have a granddaughter, 36 years old. She has two children, 6 and 3. She's a single parent, low income. Her credit score is about 660. She was renting, and she had to move, but now she doesn't have to move. She's a qualified first home buyer, so they'll put the down payment down. But I was going to give her money towards the down payment. Now that she's not pressured to move, I was wondering, she has a $300 a month car bill, you know, loan. She's got 4 years left on it. Would I be better off paying off the car? Maybe her credit score will go up and she'll have, you know, actually a little extra cash she can save, or give her money towards the mortgage. I know if you put more money down the mortgage, you don't save a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Okay. So give me those numbers again. What does she owe on the car right now? Total?
$11,000.
All right. And what's the interest rate?
I don't know. She doesn't know. And it has to be high.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
Got it. And what is that credit score? You said it's in the 500s?
660.
Oh, 660. Okay. So under the top tier, but not terrible. And then currently you said she's renting. Is that right?
Yeah. And she had to move, thought she had to move, but now she doesn't. So she's not pressured to buy a house right now. so you got more time to look.
Okay. So what is it you're willing to commit here? And by the way, is that a gift, an outright gift?
Yeah.
Okay. And how much are you willing to put or gift to her for either scenario?
$11,000.
Okay, so a total of $11,000. And so your options are give her that with the instructions of, hey, I'd really like for you to set this aside for your future home purchase when that time comes, or I'd really love for you to pay off the car, but you want to direct her to one or the other. Is that what you're thinking?
Right, because I thought paying off the car would give her an extra $300 a month.
Yeah, I like that a lot, and I think I would just really establish the idea and the value of if she could just treat it as if she still has that car payment, but just set it up as an automatic transfer to a high-yield savings account. Perhaps she opens, you know, one with the online banks. She could go to bankrate.com, find out who's paying the best rates right now, and then maybe link it up to her checking account, and then just have that automatic transfer every month. And now she's building up this reserve that she could ultimately use, you know, for a down payment. If she doesn't have an emergency fund, that would be the first priority. But she can find interest rates between, you know, 4.5 and 4.8%. And I think the key is to get it out of the checking account and just set up that automatic rhythm of savings. You'd really be helping her because now she's building up kind of this war chest, and you're saving her, you know, a good bit of money on that interest every month that she's no longer paying. So I think that's a great idea, Bill. I think that'd be a real blessing to her. And I think the key is just to make it clear that, you know, your expectation is that this is not a loan of any kind. You're just blessing her with a stronger financial foundation. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you think her credit score will go up if the car's paid off?
Not necessarily. I mean, probably a little bit. The challenge is it's going to remove one type of credit, and the credit mix is a part of the credit score. And so this is a revolving account. This is an installment loan, so that's going to come out of the equation. But the fact that she's reducing her overall debt levels and she's an on-time payer, in fact, paying it in full, is a good thing, but it just may not go as much as you expect. So if she doesn't have a credit card, maybe get her on a secured card with a recurring small budgeted item every month that she pays off in full. That would establish this rhythm. She's probably just lacking history at this point. Hope that helps, Bill. Thanks for your call. We'll be right back.
The loss of a child through abortion, miscarriage, or stillbirth affects the emotional health of families. Feelings of anger, sadness, and regret can be overwhelming. There is hope and healing in the aftermath of a reproductive loss. Call the International Helpline at 866-482-LIFE to talk with someone who has been where you are and healed to help others. Your call is confidential. 866-482-LIFE.
Have you ever wondered where your money goes when you deposit it in a bank? Christian Community Credit Union believes in helping advance God's kingdom through everyday financial transactions. For over 67 years, they have provided values-aligned banking solutions to thousands of Christians and ministries. Consider Christian Community Credit Union as your banking institution by visiting joinchristiancommunity.com. Membership eligibility required. Each account is insured up to $250,000. This institution is not federally insured.
My name is Isabella, and I received my Operation Christmas Child shoebox shortly after the fall of the communist regime in Romania. During this difficult time in my life, this shoebox was a splash of color in my black and white world. You can make a difference in the life of a child by packing a shoebox through Operation Christmas Child. To learn more or to pack a shoebox gift online, visit SamaritanSpurs.org/OCC. That's SamaritanSpurs.org/OCC.
Do you feel like your hands are tied with debt, preventing you from serving God? If you have credit card debt, Christian credit counselors can help. Through our debt management program, we can get you out of credit card debt about 80% faster while honoring your debt in full. For more information on how Christian credit counselors can help, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985. 800-557-1985.
Sandy Rios, AFA's Director of Governmental Affairs and the host of the podcast Sandy Rios 24/7.
For 40 plus years, American Family Association has been fighting for biblical values in America. We've been here to shine the light of Christ into a dark world and to stand against the evil of the day. One vital way that you can join forces with us is through a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation.
Call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Faith and Finance is grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing. For more than 30 years, they've offered financial wisdom for living well. SMI provides step-by-step guidance for do-it-yourself investors, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. More information, including a short video webinar on profit and peace of mind no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Our team is not here today, so let me just remind you not to call in, but I will also remind you that we have some great questions that we lined up in advance, so you're not going to want to miss today's broadcast. Anise is in Connecticut. Anise, go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call today.
Sure.
I have a question. Yeah, thank you. I have a question about... I have a nonprofit, and I wanted to consider trying to get a tax break as I serve people. I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know the best way to do it. I was thinking about turning the entire nonprofit over, giving it my home.
Okay. So do you operate the nonprofit out of your personal residence or a separate dwelling?
It's a separate dwelling, but it's my, you know, private home.
But so you own it personally, but you don't live there as your primary residence?
Right. Yes, sir.
Okay. You're definitely going to want to get with a professional, a CPA, to help you think through all this, and probably an attorney as well. But just generally speaking, if you have a qualified 501c3 organization, you possibly can claim a charitable deduction on your personal income taxes for the fair market value of the building, assuming it's used exclusively for charitable purposes by the nonprofit. Now, there'd be limitations on that. And you could also perhaps, by gifting it to the nonprofit, you could avoid paying capital gains on it. And you would essentially have to transfer this property to the nonprofit through a formal property transfer that would involve a deed. You'd have to make sure there's no liens or encumbrances on it. And then once it's owned by the nonprofit, then it could qualify for a property tax exemption, possibly, depending on your state's laws. And that could potentially create more for money available for the nonprofit's purposes. You'd probably have to get a valuation or an appraisal of the property. And, there's some steps here that you'd have to go through to make sure, again, you're a 501c3 and get the appraisal and then the deed transfer and then notify the IRS of the gift of the property to the nonprofit and then apply for that property tax exemption. So I would get with your CPA first and then perhaps an attorney who could help you put all these pieces in place. But I think there is a pretty good possibility that you could, in fact, turn this over to the nonprofit as a gift, receive some benefit for that. And again, as long as this is going to be used for exclusively for the charitable purposes of the nonprofit, this could be a really great opportunity for both you and the nonprofit.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right, Anise. Hey, tell us quickly what it is you do. Who do you serve through the nonprofit?
I serve many homeless people, and we allow them to come in and take showers, even if they don't stay there. We allow them to come in and clean up themselves and eat. We make meals for them. And then we have 6 residents also.
Wow. That's incredible. Well, I'll tell you what, you're doing work that's on the heart of God, the way I read scripture. So well done, Anise, and may the Lord bless your efforts there. Thanks for being on the program today. Let's go to Ohio. Teresa, go right ahead.
Hi, Rob. I've been trying to get to you for a minute now. Love and appreciate the program. I really
Well, thank
do.
You. I appreciate that.
And I also donate to your program because I need to keep it on just for my sanity.
Well, thank you. We're grateful.
Thank you. My quick question is, I own my home, but I want to purchase another home. I want to move out of my home into the new home and rent the home I live in now out. I'm trying to figure out where all these prices are going to, what's the best way for me to take money out without going into my retirement. Can I do it through equity, or do you suggest a bank?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the key here is I love the idea of you having real estate as an additional source of income. And obviously you're building equity over time. And, you know, that would be an asset for you that you could have alongside any other assets you have, you know, for your retirement and other purposes. I just don't want you to get too, you know, stretched too thin. Do you own your primary residence free and clear?
No, it's not free and clear.
Okay. Okay. What is it? What is your primary residence worth, and what do you owe on it?
Well, I was appraised at $139,000, and I owe $63,000.
All right. And what would you be looking to spend on this next property that that you would move into?
About $100,000.
Okay.
Or less.
All right, and that would become your primary residence?
Yes.
Okay, and do you have an emergency fund right now, liquid savings?
I have an IRA retirement fund, which I'm not supposed to go into it because it's like 30% when they hit you with it.
Yeah.
But I have used a small amount of it for other needs that I did have.
All right. Yeah, so one concern I have is that, you know, it doesn't sound like you have what I call an emergency fund where we recommend 3 to 6 months expenses. And so is that the case?
Well, my mortgage is paid up for 2 months ahead, and my car note is paid up 2 months ahead.
Okay, well, those are good things.
They'll allow you to pay it up 2 months ahead.
Yeah, but I would love, you know, you to have some liquid reserves first before you consider doing something like this, because if something happened, you know, just out of left field, you lost a job, you had a major unexpected medical expense, the transmission goes out. You know, it's great to have your mortgage paid up a few couple of months and your car, but what about everything else? And, you know, I would hate for the only source of reserves for you to have would be in your IRA. And it's probably going to be best to, even if you could cover the mortgage on the $63,000 with the rental income, and we got to be careful there because if we get into a recession, you know, you may have trouble getting a renter in there. And so I want you to be able to cover that out of your current cash flow. But then we're talking about getting another mortgage on your new property, which is probably the best way to go. But I'm not necessarily hearing that you've got that extra cash flow to cover that second mortgage on the primary residence. So let's do this. I want to talk a bit more, but we'll do that after the break.
This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio, and we'll be right back.
We're grateful for support from Timothy Plan. For more than 30 years, they've served clients on a biblically responsible journey to invest in a way that honors God and gives dignity to people's lives. More information is at timothyplan.com. The investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses are contained in the prospectus and summary prospectus available at timothyplan.com. Mutual funds distributed by Timothy Partners LTD and ETFs distributed by Foreside Fund Services LLC.
This weekend on The Stand Radio, Pastor Sam Crabtree, author of the book Practicing Thankfulness, will explain how a thankful heart is crucial in accomplishing God's work in our lives.
God does not waste one shred of the adversity that comes into our life, but He uses it to conform us to the image of Jesus and to develop in us the character of His Son.
The Stand Radio, Saturdays at 4 and Sundays at 8 p.m. Central on AFR.
Frustrated by your health insurance? Confused by the network restrictions and increasing premiums? There's a better way. Christian Healthcare Ministries. CHM is a Christian community delivering a faith-based solution to the high cost of healthcare. Take back control of your healthcare with the ability to choose a provider you trust with no network restrictions and savings of up to 40%. Learn more and enroll today at chministries.org/faithfi. That's chministries.org/faithfi.
Are you overwhelmed by financial fear and anxiety? At FaithFi, we hear it every day. People weighed down by worries related to wealth and money. But financial anxiety isn't about the size of your bank account. It's about the condition of your heart. That's why we've created Look at the Sparrows, a 21-day devotional that'll help you find peace through Jesus' teachings. Request a copy of the Look at the Sparrows devotional today with your gift of $25 or more by going to faithfi.com/give.
Send joy to a child in need with Operation Christmas Child. Simply pack a shoebox with fun toys, school supplies, and hygiene items. Then bring it to a drop-off location during National Collection Week, now through Monday. You can also build a shoebox online. The best part is the good news of Jesus Christ is shared alongside your gift, and each child is given the opportunity to participate in a life-changing discipleship program. Visit SamaritansPurse.org/OCC to learn more.
As the leading advocate for the Christian financial industry, Kingdom Advisors serves the public by promoting the integration of a biblical worldview across every aspect of the financial services industry. And we serve a growing network of thousands of Christian financial professionals, equipping and empowering them to carry biblical financial wisdom to their clients, peers, and community. For more information, visit KingdomAdvisors.com. That's KingdomAdvisors.com.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We're taking your calls and questions here. Before the break, we were talking to Teresa in Ohio. She owns her home. It's worth about $139,000. She owes about $63,000 on it is the mortgage that remains. She's thinking about converting that to a rental. She doesn't believe she'll have to do anything to it. It's ready to go. She thinks she can get about $1,800 a month on that rental income. Right now, she's paying $700 principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. And then she'd like to buy a second property that she and her daughter would move into for about $100, and she's coming into an inheritance of about $25,000. So if you did that, Teresa, you would need to cover the cost of your mortgage, which would probably run you, let's say you put 100% of that $25,000 toward this property, and you got a $75,000 mortgage, assuming you could find a place for $100, which is harder than ever to do with housing prices where they are, that would still put you at a mortgage payment of about $650 a month, probably principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, with where mortgage rates are right now. Because remember, they've ticked back up. And so, that $650 a month. Now, assuming you could get the $1,800 a month for the property that you're currently living in that's becoming a rental, and that would throw off $500 a month, then you'd only be coming out of pocket $150 for the new property. The only issue is, what if we're a year from now in a recession and it's harder to find a renter, or you go 6 months without a renter? That's the problem, because now all of a sudden you're carrying two mortgages, not one. You'd still have the mortgage on the rental. We'd be adding a mortgage on the second property, and you don't have any emergency savings. What kind of surplus do you have right now at the end of the month after the bills are paid, the mortgage is paid, all the other expenses in your budget? How much do you typically have left over? Anything?
Yes, about $850.
Okay. But if that's the case, though, why do you not have any liquid savings? Where's that $850 a month been going?
Just me having fun shopping.
Okay. I get it. All right. Well, here's the thing. I mean, I just feel like it's a little bit of a stretch. I mean, assuming that's real, there really is $850 a month, and you're willing to, you can demonstrate to yourself. I mean, what I'd probably get you to do is to say, listen, let's do an exercise over the next 12 months while we wait for mortgage rates to come down, because they will. We'll probably be in the low sixes a year from now, just based on what we know today. Let's do a little exercise where you commit to putting $800 a month into savings every month for the next 12 months. Now, all of a sudden, you got about 10 grand there that you could use for your emergency fund on top of the $25,000 you're getting from the inheritance. Now we've got $35,000. And if you could demonstrate that, yes, I can do that, now all of a sudden I feel better about you taking on an additional $650 a month for a $75,000 mortgage on your new property. But I don't think I would do that right now with you living right up to the edge. You're spending everything that's coming in. We got no emergency savings. And even though if you buckle up, you're thinking you could free up $800 a month, we're just not seeing it right now. And I really don't like you taking on a second mortgage with your only liquid reserves being your IRA. So I think my best advice would be we delay this project at least a year. You try to really focus on building up your savings, get the inheritance money. Let's wait for interest rates to come down and then revisit this idea. Now, at the end of the day, it's your call. You're the steward, but I would just feel better. And I feel like that would be a little bit more of a conservative approach. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. And yes, you're the steward. I listen to you every day for advice. And I'm gonna
Well, God's entrusted it to you, but I appreciate you seeking wise counsel. And I'll take that. I appreciate it, Teresa. Hey, you've been very sweet and kind with your remarks about the program. If we can help you in any way along the way, don't hesitate to call. May the Lord bless you and your daughter. Let's go to Indiana. Hi, Devin. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for your call.
Hey, so I am 28 years old. I've got a mortgage on my house. It's like $250,000. I bought it for like $285,000. It was a 30-year mortgage. My question is after expenses, I've got about $5,000 where I'm putting $4,000 of that in high-yield interest savings accounts and then $1,000 on retirement. My question is should I be paying down that mortgage as quick as possible? The interest rate's only at a 2.6. Whereas the market growth has been really good. And so I've been doing that, and the high yield interest savings accounts have been over 5. And so I've heard a lot of research and data on both sides. If you should pay your house down or if you should put it in the market. And so I wanted to get your opinion on that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, that, as you know, Devin, that's an incredible interest rate, and you've got a ton of discretionary income that you're not using, which is phenomenal. So clearly you're not, you know, as your income is rising, you're not chewing that up with additional lifestyle spending, which is admirable and not the norm. And I love that you're thinking about being strategic. Unless you have a real conviction to be debt-free, I would not pay it toward the mortgage. I mean, you've got about the best interest rate going right now. There's not many people that have a 2.6% interest rate. So apart from just a real conviction from the Lord to be debt-free, I'd continue doing what you're doing. The only thing I would ask is, you know, if you're putting $4,000 a month in high yield savings, you probably have way more than, 6 months worth of reserves at this point. And even though that interest rate is pretty compelling, you know, the stock market has done quite a bit better than that this year. And so I might flip that. Or start putting 100% of it in your retirement plan, just because, you know, you've probably got plenty in liquid savings and now's the time to build assets for the future in a tax deferred environment. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And that's what we just, I'm a small business owner as an attorney, and I've only been doing that for a couple of years, but the income has been really good. And so we've hit our 6 month expense threshold of hitting that. And then I've just been building on top of that with a new account. And so once I hit 6 months, the advice would be then to switch over to still putting some in, but putting less in and putting more on retirement.
Yeah. I mean, I'd probably freeze contributing to, unless you all just have some target beyond 6 months, I probably wouldn't continue to put money in that high yield savings, especially as that interest rates come down. I mean, just think about what's going on right now. I mean, the S&P 500 is up 23% this year. The 1 year return's like 38%. Now, I wouldn't count on that going forward. The long-term average without dividends is, a little more than 7, but, still you're going to do better over the long haul. So I think you're in a situation where if you can keep your lifestyle modest, I'd get at least 15% going to retirement and, you know, really make some good progress there. You can also start asking the question along the way, you know, are there other things we want to do? For instance, do we have any giving desires, you know, around things that are really burdening us in terms of, you know, solving, you know, problems in the world or loving your neighbor, things like that. But I would say just, you know, when you put the retirement savings alongside the just liquid reserves, once you get to 6 months at your age, I would just be dumping everything else into long-term savings and investments personally.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds like a plan. And we definitely are a big push for giving and stuff. And that's where my mentor said it's learn, earn, return. And he said, don't be so quick to skip the earn stage. But I do enjoy the giving, and that's always been a nice thing to do.
It's all about a balance between that. Just seek the Lord. He'll give you some wisdom on that, no doubt. Hey, thanks for your call, Devin. You're doing a lot of things right, my friend. We appreciate talking to you today. We'll be right back.
Wall Builders is dedicated to revealing the truth behind America's founding. Here's Tim Barton, president of Wall Builders.
Our goal here at Wall Builders is to present America's forgotten history and heroes, emphasizing the religious, moral, and constitutional heritage and foundation of our nation. Today, so few people recognize what has made this nation really the most successful, prosperous nation in the history of the world. It's a biblical foundation.
Listen to Wall Builders Live, Sunday mornings at 11:30 Central on American Family Radio.
Hi, I'm Tim Moore, senior evangelist on Christ in Prophecy. Can you see the signs of the times multiplying all around? Jesus is coming back, and he doesn't want his people to be unprepared. To stay up to date about unfolding events and get a biblical perspective on the signs of the times, listen to Christ in Prophecy here on American Family Radio. Join us Sundays at 11 a.m. Central as we reveal the prophetic hope for those who believe in Jesus Christ, as well as the Bible's warning about God's coming wrath to those who don't yet know him.
FaithFi is grateful for support from One Ascent. One Ascent believes that your values inspire why you invest and how they can inspire how you invest. One Ascent's goal is to provide solutions designed for every need and invest in businesses that bless the people and places God has made. They want to help investors do well by doing good, to explore a new way of investing that aligns with your values. More information is available at oneascent.com and by clicking Analyze My Investments.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985.
Well, I'm so thankful that you've joined us today. You know, here at Faith and Finance, we recognize that God owns it all, and therefore we don't have ownership rights. We have a responsibility as stewards to hold God's money loosely, to see it as a tool to accomplish his purposes, to be faithful in a little proportionately to what he's entrusted to us, to give generously, also to maintain an eternal perspective and pursue contentment, which is ultimately found in the work and the person of Jesus Christ alone. But when we start with that premise, then money all of a sudden finds itself into its proper place, a good gift from God to provide and enjoy and to give generously. That's kind of the framework with which we come at these questions you ask each day, and we're so thrilled that you do. In fact, here in our final segment, let's head right back to the phones to California. Hi, Jacob. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Hi there.
I'm actually an attorney, and I have an unusual situation. For a long time, I've been managing my finances responsibly, and the Lord has allowed me to stay debt-free except for student loans. And I actually, law is my second career, so I actually have about $215,000 in loans. And through careful management and a few other things, I recently left a job, and I actually have all of the money to pay off those loans right now.
Hmm. Yeah.
And I'm faced with a decision because because of all the legal shenanigans that have been going on in Missouri with the federal court save plans with the Biden administration, those plans that I was on that enabled me to have income contingent programs have now been thrown out by the court, and everything is in limbo, to say nothing of the forgiveness that was being offered to a lot of people. The programs that I was on, which enabled us to make income contingent based on, you know, dependents and whatnot, is now gone. And I was informed that I am going to be required, if nothing else happens, to start paying $2,500 a month on my loans in February. And I'm faced with a choice. You know, I could scrape together every dime that I have and finally pay these off and get rid of them, and I would have nothing else left. I still have a job. I still have, you know, income coming in that would cover everything, and we still know how to live frugally within our budget. But I wouldn't be able to purchase a home. I wouldn't be able to get a new used car for the one that's breaking down. You know, this would sort of set us back, but at the same time, we would be absolutely debt-free. So I'm faced with a choice of whether to just throw all that money at the government and say, I'm done with you, and walk away from almost 10 years that I've put in on a public student loan forgiveness program working for government jobs, or just to be done with the debt, or to kind of wait for the dust settles and see what happens on the off chance that I actually get credit for all the work that I've put in on that program.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I'm a little confused, and I will admit I'm not totally up to speed. It sounds like, I mean, you've done your homework here, but there's been some challenges that the U.S. Department of Education has acknowledged in the PSFLF, the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, that they've been trying to address through streamlining and, you know, making some changes. I mean, they've moved to centralized management where the, you know, the federal student aid platform is managing all of these. You know, they're providing payment adjustments to correct past servicing errors, which has been a big problem. They're buying back ineligible months where, you know, maybe you were, you know, previously ineligible, but you have months in deferment or forbearance, and those can count toward the 120 qualifying payments. So, you know, as long as you worked for a qualifying either government or, you know, public service entity that qualified, and you made your 10 years of on-time 120 qualifying payments, why is there uncertainty at this point about whether or not you're going to get the loan forgiveness?
Well, all of those adjustments are largely politically motivated. Most of them don't apply to my situation.
Okay.
And even if they did, you know, I speak with people all the time because they ask me, you know, what do you know about this? And, you know, my research and my speaking with the Department of Education and other people reveals that nobody really knows what's going to happen when the dust settles. People that were guaranteed and qualified before are not being granted the forgiveness that they earned. And, you know, meanwhile, everybody's being told, get ready to start making payments again because of this lawsuit. So, you know, it's classic government mismanagement, in my opinion. And really, that's my choice is, do I just wash my hands of all this and walk away just for the peace of mind of being out from under something that's been hanging over my head for 20 years? Or, you know, do I, you know, kind of hold the line and hope it works out because it's a lot of money?
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, I think you've stated it well. I would certainly agree with you about the mismanagement and the challenges and so forth that have been in place. But, you know, this program goes all the way back to 2007. I mean, it was a part of the College Cost Reduction and Access Act. So this is not, you know, a part of these latest, I'll say, shenanigans, to borrow your word, from the Biden administration, you know, trying to come in here and just do loan forgiveness, you know, with taxpayers' money, kind of as to gain political favor, and that's the way I see it. But this is around you being involved in a very specific program that's been in place for a long time that you have to qualify for based on the work you've done, and you've got to, you know, make a certain number of qualifying payments. And, you know, despite the inefficiencies and mismanagement, it's been around a long time, and I'm not aware of it going away. So I think, you know, it'd be one thing if you were counting on some of these more recent, just kind of executive branch sweeping, you know, executive orders. It's another thing, in my opinion, for you to be counting on the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, which goes back, you know, nearly 20 years. So I think for me, I mean, apart from you praying about it and just having a conviction from the Lord, you and your wife about just paying it off, and if you do go for it, I'd probably, you know, continue to apply based on the fact that you've met all the requirements and see if you can't get, you know, that to come through for you before you make that decision to pay it off, again, unless you just have a conviction to do so.
I'm actually about 2 years out from full qualification.
Okay.
And that's really the concern is, you know, do I keep doing that in the hope that, you know, it pans out or not? So,
yeah.
And I'll tell you, I listen to your show fairly regularly, and I could tell you, having large amounts of debt hanging over your head, even if you're not dealing with it on a monthly basis and struggling, I'm really tempted to just say, Lord,
yeah,
take this. I don't want to be a borrower anymore. You know, I don't want to be a debtor.
Yeah. Well, we certainly see that in scripture. You know, we see that master-slave relationship. We see that, you know, often debt was a part of, there was always negative consequences when we saw it in the Old Testament. You know, it changes the relationship. There's that burden that you have over you. And if you're wanting to be free from that and you and your wife are on the same page, I say go for it. But apart from that, I mean, I would say in this case, just given how close you are, that you have followed kind of the letter of the program, and if you'd like to see it through, you know, I don't think there's a tremendous cost to that. I mean, we're talking about the interest on this for the next couple of years that you could get rid of today if you were to pay it off. So there is somewhat of a cost, but there's also a potential major upside if, you know, the program does what it was intended to do because you've met all the requirements. So I know I'm not giving you a definitive answer, and I don't think I can. I think my inclination would be to wait it out. But, you know, based on what I'm hearing in your voice about just the burden that it is over the two of you, perhaps the best option after you seek the Lord on it is just to write that check and be done with it. Obviously, you'll have, you know, not only that off your back, it doesn't help with cash flow just because you're not paying on it currently, it doesn't sound like, but at least you'd be able to start with a clean slate, completely debt-free, and you could build from there.
Well, that's helpful, and I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely, Jacob. All the best to you. We'll ask the Lord to give you some wisdom as you manage through this. Thanks for calling today. To Tennessee, quickly. Hi, Marcia. How can I help you?
Hi. I'm trying to figure out the best way to transfer my home, and that's about all the only assets I would have up on my desk. To transfer everything to my children without having to go through probate.
Yeah. So you've got a couple of options there. If you want to avoid probate, the first and most common option is a revocable trust where you'd place the home in the trust. So you'd have to retitle it in the name of the trust. And essentially, through the actions of a successor trustee, once you pass away, it would allow you to transfer efficiently and in whatever timing you choose or with whatever conditions you want that property to the heir or ministry of your choice without a will and by bypassing the probate process. The other approach is a transfer on death deed. I don't remember right offhand if that's available in Tennessee. I think it is, but you could look into that. And either case, I'd check with a godly estate planning attorney, and let's see if you know, they can help you get that set up. But that's going to cover what you're looking for, which is to efficiently pass your assets, including your home, outside of probate. Either the trust, which is going to run you $2,000 to $3,000, but will accomplish exactly what you're looking for, or that TOD deed.
And what is that TOD again?
It's called a transfer on death deed. And essentially, okay. It's like a beneficiary designation that you would have on an IRA, but it's specifically for a home. And you would have to, you know, put it in place. I'm looking here, though, quickly. It looks like Tennessee does not do the TOD deed. And so I think you are going to need to go the direction of a revocable trust. And the way you would learn more about that is I'd reach out to a certified Kingdom advisor in Tennessee on our website, faithfi.com. Just click find a professional. Any one of those CKAs in your town could refer you to a godly estate planning attorney, and that's who would help you set up that revocable trust.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
All right. God bless you. Folks, Thanks for being along with us today. I'm Rob West, and on behalf of my team today, producer Devin Patrick, call screener today Pat Montague, researcher Jim Henry, I'm Rob West. This has been Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. Have a great day, and if you want to check out our website, go to faithfi.com. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.